Lorena here from Everything's Canceled podcast. Herman and I hope you've been enjoying our show. The best way to support us right now is to subscribe to our Patreon for some exclusive episodes and more at patreon.com/everythingscanceled. And don't forget, there's only one L in canceled. And shop our new merch on our Shopify. The Shopify is everythingscanceled.myshopify.com. Now let's get to today's show. You're listening to Everything's Canceled podcast with your hosts,
Herman
and Lorena. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening to right now and follow us on Instagram at Everything's Canceled podcast. In each episode, we discuss topics in detail that could be triggering for some listeners, so please listen with care.
All content provided in this podcast is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Any copyrighted content reproduced in this podcast is done so in accordance with Section 107 of the Copyright Act, allowing fair use and is not an infringement of copyright. Any information discussed referring to specific incidents are allegations only, unless proven otherwise in a court of law. Due to the changing nature of laws, rules, and regulations, the hosts make no representations to the accuracy or completeness of any information in this podcast and will not be liable for any errors, omissions, nor the availability of this information, for any losses, injuries, or damage from the display or use of this information.
Good evening, Herman.
Hey.
It's 1 a.m. in our little home studio.
Oh, God.
Because this is when our baby finally sleeps.
We have been trying to get this episode recorded for many days now, and we're here. We're staying up late for you.
I think that this episode coming in a few days late is actually in our benefit because we've been learning so much the last few days, and this episode has completely changed direction. I was going to kind of drive the car on this one only for you to swoop in and tell me I was wrong about everything. So
that happens sometimes.
It does happen. And yeah, so we took a couple extra days. So we're sorry that we didn't have an episode for you the following Monday like normal, but I promise this one is pretty juicy. So
yeah, we learned a lot in preparation for this episode and it changed the way we think a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So before we jump in, let's do a little housekeeping. There's been some big things going on for our podcast this past week. I think we already announced that we have a merch shop up.
Everythingscanceled.myshopify.com.
Yeah, that one. And if you looked at it last week, you should look at it again because we keep changing the merch and fighting over designs. And so we will know who is a better designer based on which ones you buy. Follow our Instagram at Everything's Canceled Podcast. And we actually just discovered that all of these messages were going into our other folder.
Oops, sorry.
Our, like, hidden folder. And I discovered them today and we sat there and like read all of these wonderful messages that we were gotten. People are a lot nicer to us on Instagram than on Spotify. People come at us with attitude on Spotify, but we got lots of love on our Instagram. Long messages about how much certain episodes meant to you or whatever, and we just love it. So send us love or send us episode suggestions. We got a lot of suggestions too.
Yeah, some good ones.
Yeah, so keep listening because you might hear them, and I will do my best.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll do our best to try to respond to messages. And also, if you rate us 5 stars on Spotify, you get free stickers, but you have to message us your address. We promise not to stalk you. We will just send you stickers. I think that's it for behind-the-scenes stuff. So let's move forward. Because originally, I had a whole podcast ready to talk about the relationship between Drake Bell and Josh Peck. But who's canceled this week, Herman?
Drake Bell, again.
Well, this time. Drake Bell did the canceling in the last few episodes.
Yes, yes.
And this time the tables are being turned and he's being canceled this week.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Drake this week. We'll be talking all about Drake and learning a lot of new things about Drake as I did in the past few weeks. We talked about this in our previous episode where we talked about what our relationship was to Nickelodeon and how we knew this actor, how we knew these people. And I experienced a lot of whiplash this week going from watching Quiet on Set and learning about Drake Bell's abuse and feeling a lot of sympathy.
And we still do.
Yeah, absolutely. But I went from feeling that way to learning a lot of new things about him that make me see him differently, at least.
Our different relationships with Drake Bell specifically is that, like, you are a Nickelodeon fan, but you didn't ever really watch Drake and Josh.
Yeah, I was too old to ever watch Drake and Josh. I've never seen an episode of that, so I didn't know who that was, and so I really learned about Drake Bell through this.
Yeah, and I kind of had a double whiplash because, I mean, I was a fan of him on Drake and Josh. And then I did hear about him being canceled years ago. I did hear about that. So then when the documentary came out, I was like, didn't this guy rape someone or something? And then he came on the documentary. I was like, oh, okay, he's also a victim. Like, okay. And then I went and looked it up again. The internet had kind of buried it. You know, I was like, oh, maybe this was nothing.
Yeah, I remember hearing a little bit about him being canceled in the past, but I feel like that really got washed away kind of in the tide of cancellations that happened post-Me Too. And so I think it was easy to forget about Drake and forget about a lot of those individual ones, which is kind of why we're going back and looking at it now.
I also wonder if the time of it being brought to court, it being at the height of 2020, that it also just like wasn't really being talked about because we had all the Black Lives Matter movements going on. It was an election year and we had COVID. Were we really talking about Drake? I remember seeing very little about it and not really thinking much about it, to be honest. Also, when it did come out in the news that he was being accused of something, it wasn't like Drake is being accused of sexually assaulting someone. It was he's getting child endangerment charges. It was very vague. I remember just kind of brushing it off, just kind of assuming that whatever happened probably happened. He was a little bit canceled in my mind, but I never really thought about it. It wasn't like a huge cancellation. I don't know. Drake Bell's just not talked about much, so his cancellation didn't feel huge. It didn't cancel a current career.
Yeah, I came into this podcast thinking the same thing. I was under the impression that I had heard a little bit of talk about him being convicted for something, like something about talking to a minor, but it seemed as though people were pretty ready to brush it away, and people had a lot of explanations as to why it wasn't very significant. For one reason or another, I was hearing a lot of different arguments, things that were being said on the internet, just the comments type of things. And so coming into this podcast from last week, where, like I said, I was still in a place where I really only knew Drake from the little I knew about Drake and Josh and what I learned about him from Quiet on Set, I was ready to just kind of accept that. That he had some troubled things in his past, things that he mentions often in the interviews that he's done since Quiet on Set, that he seems to take accountability for on some level.
Right.
And so I was kind of ready to like move on with that, and we were going to try and have a further conversation about Drake. But then once we learned the details of the child endangerment case and what that entailed, and then also some of the other details around other allegations that have been made against Drake, it painted a bit different picture of at least what this person's personal life is. And like Lorena said, it doesn't make this person not worthy of our sympathy for the fact that they are also a victim, but I definitely see him differently. It definitely paints a different picture of how he's portrayed himself leading up to the documentary, in the documentary, after the documentary.
I think it's actually a really important conversation because, speaking of notes from listeners, we did get one comment from a listener who I think misunderstood something that I said in a podcast episode a few weeks ago. And the only reason I'm addressing it is because I think that maybe she wasn't the only one who possibly misunderstood what I said. And I want to expand on it because it's going to be super relevant to the conversation that we're having today. I did mention about Drake being canceled before when we started the series on Brian Peck. And I said, Drake is an example of how hurt people hurt people. And I think that this listener, and maybe some of you other ones out there, took that as, oh, when people are abused, they go on to further abuse people. And that's true, but that's actually uncommon. And the listener pointed that out to me, that they felt concerned that I was putting out this idea that if you're hurt, you will go on to hurt people. What I'm actually saying is that people who our abusers, most of the time, have been abused themselves. And I want to share a statistic because this is not just relevant to Drake, because we have to look at Drake as a victim who went on to abuse. And he's getting all this sympathy as a victim because he came out about his story, and that's great. And people are able to see him as this human. People are not all good or all bad, but we wholesale throw Brian Peck away, as we should. I'm not arguing with that, but I can almost guarantee that Brian Peck was probably harmed as a child too. We just haven't heard his story. So I just wanted to share this statistic with you. Somewhere between 10 to 30% of abused people, and the reason that number varies is because this includes physical abuse as well as sexual abuse. So 10 to 30% of abused people will go on to abuse people. However, when we look at people who have abused people, anywhere from 40 to 75% of those people have abuse in their past against themselves as children. This is very significant. I am not here to say that if you were hurt as a child that you're automatically going to hurt someone, but I am going to say the very uncomfortable thing that whoever abused you as a child was also probably abused as a child. That is something I've had to come to terms with my own abuser. It's where I was able to find forgiveness but still have boundaries. It helped me understand my world better, and it was the thing that helped me cope the most with my trauma. And so these are the conversations that we're going to dive into today. I think we spent a lot of time talking about Drake as a victim, and now we're going to talk about what has happened to Drake since the abuse up to the documentary, because that is what the documentary doesn't cover. And we're going to talk about flaws in the documentary itself and their mission and what they were doing in regards to abuse and what's been left out.
To respond to that, I think that what's so crazy about all of this is the ways that it displays how this type of abuse is cyclical and how so many of these types of abuse repeat themselves, but then how we keep hearing the same stories and even the same things being said and turned around to be said about different people, and how those things can be obscured, but how they really just show themselves over and over and over again. Because before we're done with this podcast, we're going to talk about Drake Bell being accused of the exact same type of abuse that he was the victim of, potentially and allegedly, throughout basically his entire adult life as we know it, and in certain specific instances, potentially dating teenage girls and being involved with teenage girls, underage girls, many times, and in almost every case, girls who are about 15 and 16 years old, the same age that he was when he was being abused by Brian Peck. And then we're also going to hear from the victim in Drake Bell's child endangerment case. We're also going to hear from some ex-girlfriends of Drake, and they all repeat something that Drake Bell said as well, where they talk about how their abuse was basically, imagine the worst abuse that you can imagine, and that's what happened to me. And then there's one other thing. I'd like to cover the letter that Kimmy Robertson wrote that was one of the letters in support of Brian Peck, and she describes a really odd situation that seems to really flip the script between Brian Peck and Drake Bell too, and potentially personify Brian Peck's victim, who we now know to be Drake Bell, as a predator, as this like hypersexual, homosexual predator. And it's a very strange personification that seems to like flip the script in a way that is, it doesn't make sense, but we'll add up all of those things all together once we've heard all of it.
Right. I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to get into like the pathology of child sex abuse victims and how their sexuality develops into adulthood. So I just kind of want to insert here on my other podcast, Sex Without Fear, you can find it anywhere. my very first episode that I recorded, so scroll all the way down, the very first episode, it's called What Percent of the Population is a Pedophile? I cover this exact topic and what we're doing treatment-wise and what's available for people to overcome childhood sexual abuse so that they don't further on the abuse onto other people, as well as how we deal with actual pedophiles and the difference between pedophiles and child sex abusers. And if you don't know what the difference is between those two things, please listen to that podcast because it's very relevant to this conversation right now and probably to real life issues in your own life. So please go listen to that because I could go on about why Drake probably went on to do this based on his past. And I could take up an hour and a half, and I already did that on that podcast. So let's get into covering the case.
Yeah, let's talk about, I don't want to say the most significant case, but essentially the one that we know the most about, because the entire video from Drake's sentencing is available online on YouTube because it took place in 2021. So this was taking place in the COVID courtroom, and so it all took place via Zoom, and so there's video of it, and mm-hmm. so this has been publicized by the Law and Crime Network on YouTube.
There are a couple things, we're not going to talk about them in length, but you should know that in Drake's early 20s, he got 2 DUIs within a couple years of each other. And before the Quiet on Set documentary, when you Googled Drake Bell's name, what came up was this child endangerment case. But now if you Google Drake's name today, you will only see him being a victim of Brian Peck. So that is an interesting shift. And so let's reel it back.
So the case took place in 2021. And ultimately, this led to Drake taking a plea deal. And his plea deal was that he pled guilty to 2 charges. Another full circle moment, because this is exactly what happened in Brian Peck's case. But in this case, Drake Bell pleads guilty to 2 charges, felony attempted child endangerment, and the other one is disseminating matter harmful to a juvenile, and that one's a misdemeanor. And he ends up being sentenced to 2 years probation and 200 hours of community service by the judge in this Ohio case.
And to reel back a little bit more in time, the case was in 2021. The police reports were made in 2020. And for reference, he was 34, 35 at the time of all of this coming out. But the events...
The alleged events.
Yeah, took place in 2017. He would have been 31 and the girl in question would have been 15.
Mm-hmm.
But he had known this girl for many years before that. When she was 12, he would have been about 28, if I am mathing right.
This case never went to trial because Drake took a plea deal and he pled to these 2 charges. So that means that there was an investigation by police that led to the charges being made. But we don't have any of the information that you would learn had this gone to trial. And like, it's a little bit limited, but what we do have is the statements that were given during the sentencing. And during this, the victim, this girl has chosen and done her best to remain anonymous since then.
She hasn't written a book. She hasn't released the text messages.
No, she hasn't done anything like that. And they mention during some of the court proceedings about the possibility of this potentially leading to like a civil case after that where she could sue him. And you know that in civil trials, it requires less for them to prove that something happened. You know, it requires less evidence necessarily to like get a conviction. And so they mentioned that being a possibility, but that hasn't happened yet. And Drake's lawyers do some really shady things during their defense. And one of them is that he very clearly like says her initials out loud and basically tries to out her. And even the fact that this video is available is definitely problematic.
Yeah,
because
her face is
you see her face, you hear her voice, we hear her initials, and she was underage at the time, so her identity would have and should have been kept private. And like I said, she hasn't come out and said it. She doesn't do interviews. She doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? So it kind of sucks that you see her face and that we know so much about her. But what we do learn, which is really important, is she takes the time to detail all of the allegations that she has made against Drake. And she makes sure to say all of the things. And this is another situation where you're hearing her. You're really hearing her, right? Like, what was your experience of listening to her testimony?
I mean, I have several thoughts, but one that is going through my head right now is how familiar she felt with him. So we see her face is up, and his isn't, but she can see him. And he's making faces as she makes her witness statement, but she's responding to him, and she will cut off and she'll be like, stop looking at me like that, don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's like she knows the game he is playing. Like, she's very familiar with him. And before I knew much about the case, I definitely had been sold the idea that this was just a crazy fan and she made all of this up. But you'll see two ages talked about in this, that she was 15, that she was 12. Drake met this girl in person at 11 years old. She was 11, and there's some sort of connection between her aunt and him, to where this girl's aunt knew Drake, and she was a fan. She was a fan of Drake. She had watched the show. Mm-hmm. She liked his music, and her aunt, like, sets it up for her and is like, yeah, you can meet Drake. So she does. They meet. He's very nice to her. He makes her feel very special. And then they become social media friends when she was 12. They started interacting on social media when she was 12. And she talks about the interactions that they had at this time. They seemed to her fairly innocent. He asked her how things are going with boys. She said that he was just there for her as a friend, that they had a lot of conversations. Things that I'm curious about that we'll never get answers to: did he share with her the abuse he went through? At this time, he was going through the after effects of his DUIs and also allegations of girlfriends saying that he abused them. He is talking to this young girl. He's going through a lot in his life, a lot of mess, drugs, alcohol, all of these things. Another question: was he on drugs or drinking when he's talking to this girl? But he had just met her at 11. So when they add each other on social media and she's 12, the idea that he did not know her age at that point doesn't add up.
Yeah, she tells a couple stories. One about how when she was 13 years old, she was having some sort of boy trouble, and she, like, reached out to Drake, and that he sent her a photo back to her
of herself.
Yeah, of herself that he had saved from her Instagram, and said, oh, well, look at this photo of you. You're such a cutie. Boys are stupid. She says she was 12 years old in this photo, and he continued to engage with her like this. She says that when she's 14, in their conversations, he's telling her things about how she's grown so much and how she looks like a woman now. And then she says that when she turns 15, this progression continues, and he starts telling her about how hot she is. And then around that time, she is going to go see him at a concert. So she tells him that she's going to be going to this concert. And this part is really important because this comes up later, too. In the conversation leading up to her coming to the concert, he asks her directly how old she is. And she tells him, I am 15 years old. To which he replies, hurry up.
When she tells her victim statement, she says, hurry up. Stop smiling at me.
We think that it's because they're on a Zoom call, but she can see his face and she's responding to him.
Yeah, but what we do know is that he said, hurry up, which is very clear that he's saying, hurry up and turn 18, right? That's the given. And that becomes very important in the case, because when they bring this up in court, the defense attorney says that that is evidence that he didn't want to talk to her any further in this manner. Not that, oh my God, I want you so bad, that's not the definition of grooming.
right around this is when the incidents happen, when she actually does, according to her, come in contact with Drake, and she details three different events in which she's sexually assaulted by Drake, according to her. This also leads to an ongoing social media correspondence between them two that she says after this becomes blatantly sexual, and that there are many months of inappropriate messages and photos being exchanged between the two of them on Instagram and Snapchat. And this includes photos both of her body and his body and his genitals.
And remember, he's 31 at this time. She's 15. He's 31. Mm-hmm.
And she also talks about how she has this kind of dual relationship with him through time, where she is, like, on one hand infatuated with him and sees him as he's this big star. He's incredible. He's this incredible person. But on the other hand, she says that she's scared of him. She's scared of, he's verbally abusive. He will flip on her and say horrible things to her if she doesn't do what he wants. He has two sides, essentially.
Which, she's not the only one who said that.
Yeah, and she says, if I upset him, he'd make me cry. He'd make me feel disgusting and awful about myself. But that I also idolized him.
Yeah, you're 15. And talking to a star.
This leads us to the events that she details.
Which he does say none of this even happened. Mm-hmm. That they never hung out. They were never alone. He never touched her. She's just a crazed fan. And that none of this is true. And he is adamant about that.
So the first of these events took place when she went to go see his concert on December 1st of 2017. And this is at the Odeon Concert Club in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yep.
And she claims that what happens is she was there with her aunt. And after the show, she was backstage with Drake Bell. And that he forced her to perform oral sex on him after the show.
Twice. Specifically.
Yeah. And she also says that she was menstruating at the time. And that she believes 100% that he would have raped her if she wasn't.
Yeah, it's like very specific.
And she says that in the messages that she'd received, he'd said so specifically that he wanted to. And she said that he had described it in detail in very vulgar language. And then this leads to a second incident the next day on December 2nd, 2017. And what happened was she was corresponding with Drake via social media, and that he wanted to see her one last time before leaving town. And so she went to go visit him at his hotel room. And she claims that when she went to go visit him at the hotel room, that her aunt was outside in the hall while Drake sexually assaulted her again and again forced her to perform oral sex on him. So not long after these alleged incidents take place, the victim claims that she received a message from Drake's account, and that this message was from his wife at the time, Janet Vaughn. And this led to a confrontation. Do you remember that part?
Yeah, it's right here.
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit. I gotta lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit seriously.
In January 2018, I was engaging in an inappropriate conversation with who I thought was the defendant until I received a message back from the defendant's account claiming to be Janet. That was the first interaction I ever had with her. This confused and devastated me. I begged the defendant for an explanation about that exchange with her, and he brushed it off by repeatedly claiming that everything was fine. The sexual messages continued for a while after that until I eventually put a stop to them. I did that by confronting him about what he had done to me. I confronted him that September, just weeks before I reported the Illinois and Ohio crimes to my local police.
Mm-hmm. And she's referring to the other sexual assault incident that she alleges against Drake, which is she claims that at a time where they met in Illinois, that she was in the car with Drake while her aunt was driving, and that Drake and her were in the back seat, and that he digitally penetrated her. And this is interesting when it comes to how this trial came to be, because the next thing that happens is she goes to police soon after that in September of 2018. And she's Canadian, but they coordinate with the police in both Illinois and Ohio to bring the charges against Drake. And the police in Illinois said that they were not going to bring a case against Drake unless Ohio didn't. And this explains something that doesn't seem right, or that we wouldn't maybe necessarily understand about the legal system, but I think that is fairly common. And I think that we all commonly think that if a crime like this is committed, and in every case of a crime like this being committed, then doesn't that inevitably lead to charges if they're reported? But that's not really the way that that really happens. They do an investigation and they gather up what evidence they do have. And then when there are multiple jurisdictions like this, there are negotiations that take place between them that lead to them pursuing the case where they think they have the best evidence and are the most likely to lead to a conviction. And so I think that that's what's happening in this situation, is that there were limited charges that were brought, and only in the Ohio case, not in the Illinois case. And then also what happened is, of course, Drake pleads to some of the lesser charges. So there weren't any charges of sexual assault were brought. He was only convicted of the lesser charges.
I think the fact that it's extremely difficult to get sexual assault cases, it's really hard to get charges against your rapist. It's difficult to have evidence. And then if anything is working against you, you have defense attorneys. It's difficult by default. And so I always look at when people do get charged with something, I'm like, wow, they must have had something there. And what's interesting is, like, the defense lawyer in this case tries to slime his way out of this direct question from the judge. Were the text messages sexual? They say that they were unable in the forensic investigation to find the photos that she claimed were exchanged between them, but they were able to find the text messages.
He doesn't respond directly, but he kind of moves on in a way that you can tell that he's accepting that statement as true.
Yeah.
And the lawyers, Drake's defense lawyers, do quite a job of dancing around the subject and trying to construe or potentially misconstrue the situation in one way or another. It's pretty funny and impressive.
But he does plead guilty to this, to the text messages, to engaging with a minor.
Yes. The two charges that Drake does plead to that I mentioned before, attempted child endangerment. His lawyers say this refers specifically to him violating his duty of care when they were in contact, so when they were together. And that is because he also pleads guilty to the misdemeanor disseminating matter harmful to juveniles, which refers specifically to the text messages. So I guess that means because he had been disseminating matter that was harmful to the juvenile, that he was also violating his duty of care by being in direct contact with her.
Is that just like a lot of mumbo jumbo for grooming?
Essentially, yes.
I think this is part of the reason why people were able to kind of brush this off, because it remains so vague. The headlines and the charges, it's like child endangerment.
Mm-hmm.
I have a family member who got charged with child endangerment because he had a friend who was a foster kid and he drove her over the border into another state, which was only 20 miles away. And the state charged him because she belonged to the state. He got charged with child endangerment and nothing happened, you know? And so it's like child endangerment. Like I kind of, unless it's like a child abuse case of your own child, child endangerment just kind of flew over my head. I was like, well, that could be anything. I think a lot of people in the public felt that way.
There's one other really important thing that the victim says about Drake in her statement. And she says that she does not believe that the defendant is remorseful in any way. And she says that since this, he has continually used tactics to gain sympathy from the public. And that he is even one that Drake has definitely proven himself to be very online. And she claims that he has seemingly found a lot of humor and pleasure in the fact that he has a lot of online defenders.
She hints that when people make comments, he may not reply directly, but he likes their comments or makes it well known that he agrees when people make joke about her being a liar.
And so let's talk a little bit more about what his lawyers say in defense. They say that, and this is something that is very commonly repeated by his defenders online, is that once he knew her age, he stopped communicating right away. And we know that this is not true because he knew her age before leading up to when he directly asked her what her age was. And she says that she's 15 years old, to which he replies, "Hurry up." And his lawyers say that this shows a complete intent not to engage, that his response to her telling him that she is 15 years old and him saying that she should hurry up, that shows that Drake had no intent to talk to her anymore. A complete intent not to engage.
Imagine then going, oh man, can't wait for that. Like, hurry up. Like, I can't wait.
That's what he's saying.
What else does that mean? Yeah. Bad move, bro. And if that was the end of it, like, oh, hurry up. Let me know when you're 18. That would also be a different story than what we have here today. But he went on to see her in person and continue talking to her.
Mm-hmm. The lawyers also, they were able to circle around so much of what she says. And they say that at the start, he may not have known the age. But we know that her age was mentioned specifically during the chat. So at the start, he may not have known her age, but he did. He did know her age. You could say that he may not have, but he did.
Well, and why was he asking? Because he met her when she was very young, when she was 11 years old. She couldn't have been that much older. He was trying to gauge how old she was. If he thought she was over 18, would he have even asked? He wasn't surprised. He was just like, oh man, like, hurry up.
And they also attempt to characterize her negatively by saying that this girl was a super fan that worshipped Mr. Bell. And the other thing that they say, and they try and smear her, is saying that she had made no claims of inappropriate contact until the victim heard that Drake Bell had a wife. And that would be in the conversation between her and supposedly Drake Bell's wife. So they try and paint her, one, as like this silly young super fan who is obsessed with Drake, but that also she was totally cool with him or anything that had happened between the two of them until she found out that he had a wife.
I have a lot to say on that because, I mean, I would hope that people don't actually hold this mentality, but obviously people do. And I'm just going to tell you right now, the way that grooming works is these children are not fighting it. The way that grooming works is you make them fall in love with you. You tell them that they're special. You tell them that I can't help myself. I want you so bad. You drive me crazy. I just want you. And you tell that to any 15-year-old and them not fall in love with you, right? She's young. It's one of her first experiences with relationships, with a boy, with sexual things, right? Then have that 15-year-old girl who has no emotional maturity find out that this whole time that you've been telling her that she's so special and she's like, you just can't help yourself. And then you're like, oh, by the way, like, this is my wife. of course that's going to destroy her. We can see this across the board when we see this happen to celebrities where they were talking to minors and they were sleeping with minors. And then they find out that you had a wife or a girlfriend the whole time and they blow up your fucking spot because they're no longer special to you. So what do they have on you? They have, and I don't mean this as like, oh, well now, you know, it's revenge. Well, it kind of is. Like, that's what happens when you try to fuck a 15-year-old. You took away all their power. You were the one with all the power. What is she left with? You left me heartbroken. You raped me. Whether it was forceful or not, it's statutory rape. I mean, you don't do this on a moral standard because it's a fucking child, but also just like common sense wise, don't fucking do it to a child who is going to react these ways. It's not just like cheating on some other girl. Like, you groomed a minor and didn't tell her that you had a wife, and then she found out, and what did you expect her to do? So it's just like the dumbest thing that you could do. Like, I'm not trying to brush off the very seriousness of like, don't rape a child, but like, also, I don't know, if you're going to be that evil, like, the dumbest thing that you could do is that, and expect it to go well. Expect her to not retaliate in some way. I don't know. Am I crazy for pointing that out?
Well, I just think it's funny because the lawyers are trying to explain away her as like this jealous little girl because she found out that he had a wife. But it's kind of a gotcha moment because aren't they just confirming that the conversation took place between her and the wife?
Absolutely.
They're confirming that by trying to explain it away. And then I think that kind of happens twice more in the lawyer's statements where they talk specifically about the two incidents in Cleveland. One, the hotel room incident, and they say that, oh, we confirmed that they were never alone in the hotel room because there was another adult in the hotel room, and we interviewed that person, and they gave a statement that said that they were never alone in the hotel room. But aren't they, again, confirming that although this one person is saying that the two of them were never alone in the hotel room, they're confirming that they were indeed in the hotel room together? And then they do the same thing by talking about the potential incident that took place backstage at the Odeon by using the same argument, by saying there were people who were in and out of that backstage dressing room all night. So there's no way that this could have happened because there were so many other people present. And we have numerous statements from those people. But again, doesn't that just confirm that this girl was indeed backstage at the Odeon with Drake? They're just trying to explain it away by saying, well, it couldn't have possibly happened because there were other people there too.
Yeah. And it's like, I was a teenager once and I literally would fool around with my boyfriend while my parents were just 10 feet away, dude. And they didn't even notice. Teenagers do that stuff. Apparently 31-year-old men do it.
And who's to say that these people aren't just covering anyway?
Also, like, was it on their radar to be watching because they thought something was going to happen between Drake and this child? Were they staring, being like, oh, I never took my eyes off her because I was worried about her? If it wasn't on their radar at all, they were just having a night. Were they looking the whole time? I just don't buy it.
And the lawyers go on to make some typical lawyer bullshit statements about how Drake's already paid a great penalty, one beyond what other people would face because he's famous and there's already so many articles about him, and that he's faced a loss of employment because of this. Boo-hoo. But what I'd like to also talk about is this also kind of disproves one of the main arguments that the online Drake Bell defenders make all the time, which is that the girl from this case, she was lying about her age the whole time, and that she had been using a fake Instagram, a Finstagram, to contact Drake Bell.
That's what I thought. Yeah. The internet fed me that one.
The argument was that potentially this 12, 13, 14-year-old girl had created a fake account, and that either she was so mature looking in these photographs, because you see this stupid argument all the time, which I'm sure is true in some cases, but that some 14-year-old girls look so mature, she probably could fool him. or that she's using a fake Instagram with fake pictures and that she used that to entrap Drake into having a full-on conversation that somehow turned sexual, but then when she actually divulged her real age to him, that the conversation stopped immediately. And like I said, that's the argument that you're going to hear a lot from the online Bell defenders. And if you listen to any part of the story, her victim statement, and then again, the things that the lawyers confirm, even implicitly in the things that they say, then that completely falls apart. And I'll tell you, that was the thing that made me skeptical in the first place. That was the one that planted the seed of doubt in my head that sent me down this whole rabbit hole, because I just didn't buy that like a 13 or 14 year old girl was all that capable of tricking an adult man into having a conversation with a fake account with anything. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's unfucking likely.
Well, and the most striking thing, like, I mean, I was willing to buy that possibility, especially if he found out her age and then stopped talking to her, which we also find out that's not how that happened. But when you look at the video, she is 19 in the video, and she is not even look 19. She's very young looking. Mm-hmm. So I cannot imagine her at 12 or 15 when he's talking to her online and during those years, that she even looked her age then. She would have been very adolescent looking. She's beautiful and very young looking at 19 years old. So it's like, and he met her at 11. He met her just a couple years before that when she was 11. I mean, do you know any 11-year-old who could even trick you? Like, I just...
That's a kid.
That's a little kid.
That's a kid.
And it's just like, shame on you. Like, you literally went through this as a victim. Yeah.
So, keeping in mind what the victim said about whether the defendant, Drake Bell, was remorseful or not, and whether he used tactics to manipulate the public after that, Lorena, do you remember what happened after this hearing took place? Immediately after this hearing took place, the Zoom hearing online, what did Drake Bell do?
Well, before that, do you remember his apology during the court?
Yes.
Yeah, let me comment on that first, because he does say that he's sorry during the video. And it's like he's looking at the judge and he very quickly says, "I'm sorry if I harmed this victim or anyone that knew her." It's
very brief,
very bland. And for someone that claims to have never touched this girl, like, what are you apologizing for then? You claim that you're innocent all the way through. He makes it sound in every podcast that he's done since the documentary and everything he says, "I made the mistake of just not asking her how old she was before I messaged her. But the moment I found out, I was done." And then she just sort of, you know, crazy fan, you know how they are. And she
hurry
just,
up.
Yeah. And it's like, bro, no, you said hurry up. And then you kept messaging her and then you saw her in person. And whether you raped her or not, we can't prove. But seems like you spent some time in a hotel with her, backstage with her, in a car with her in several states. That's not cutting it off. Anyways, so then
Immediately after this hearing, on camera, in the same room that he is seen in the video in his hearing.
Because you see him, like, he's clearly, like, in his office of his house or whatever. He shuts off the Zoom call from where he just got charged with child endangerment for sexting a minor. He then goes on Instagram Live and starts playing his music. And when you told me this, Herman, I immediately was just like, okay, like, I was playing devil's advocate because, yeah, I went into this thinking that Drake was innocent and I wanted him to be innocent. So I was like, okay, well, I mean, he says he didn't do it. So if he didn't do it, he wanted to just go cathartically, like, play music. And then I was like, what do you think about it?
Are you seriously using the publicity around your conviction for felony attempted child endangerment and disseminating matter harmful to juveniles to do an IG live concert and promote your music right now? Is that really what he did?
Yeah, because you pointed out, like, okay, now everyone's going to be Googling, looking him up. They're like, oh my God, the headlines, Drake, court, child endangerment. Okay, I'm going to go look him up on Instagram. And there he is promoting his new music. It's a great way to get some Spotify listens on the spot.
And we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but We also know that Drake Bell has a new song and a new music video out, and he timed this music video and song to come out at the same time as the Quiet On Set documentary. And that's not, there's no coincidence. Okay, and we're going to cut it right there and save the rest of the discussion about Drake Bell for next week. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to continue talking about his new song and music video and the timing of the release of that. We're going to talk about additional allegations that have been made against Drake by an ex-girlfriend, a couple ex-girlfriends, and some TikTok people. Some
TikTokers.
Some anonymous allegations that were made on TikTok. And we're also going to talk about the letter that Kimmy Robertson wrote in support of Brian Peck.
And if you can't wait until next week for the next episode, we do have our first Patreon episode dropping this week. So go ahead and subscribe to our Patreon and catch that new episode, because it will come out before the part two of this one. And we cover some more of our opinions on the Drake Bell situation that we didn't bring to the public podcast here.
Yeah. We're releasing our first episode on the Patreon. Every week we have so many things that we don't have time to get to. And as soon as we're done recording, we have a lot more thoughts and a lot more things that we want to talk about. And so I've just been writing them all down, and we're going to discuss them all on the Patreon episode. And we just get to say a little bit more there and go a little bit deeper. So it's pretty fun for us. And if you've been listening and you're looking for more content, that's where we're going to have it. We'll have it on the Patreon. So first episode dropping later this week.
All right. We will catch you on the next episode and see you at the Patreon.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, Herman.
Bye.